This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m., and we rebroadcast Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast on your smartphone. Simply go to the podcast app and search for DC 37 State of the Union. There are more ways to stay in touch with the union now than ever before. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Of course, there's the DC 37 website, www.dc37.net. For news about events, latest news about events, please call the hotline at 212-815-7555. And you can also make any comments you want about this show, ask any questions you want. Just drop us a line at State of the Union. That's one word, State of the Union, at dc37.net. Your feedback is always welcome, and your suggestions are always welcome. And on this show, we're going to start off by talking about the need to adequately fund our public libraries. The city budget is in negotiations right now, and the libraries, our city libraries, is one of our top priorities as we enter the long phase of the budget process. We're joined on the phone by the president of the Queens Library Guild Local 1321. John Hislop is the president. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Before we talk, let's just take a listen to Val Colone. He's the president of Local 1930. We did a press conference last week on the steps of City Hall, and Val Colone talked a little bit about the work that his members do. So let's take a listen.
Hi, I'm Val Colone. I'm the president of the New York Public Library Guild, Local 1930, and I'm here with my members, and we're here to fight and ask for additional funding because simple economics, you know, the money that we've been getting is not enough for us to keep doing what we've been doing and to do it at the level that we do it, which is a great level. We cover three boroughs in the city of New York, and we do all the applications and registering kids, helping them with homework. We have a safe place for children and for teens and for seniors because they love our branches. They come in. That's a great place to meet up with their friends, read the papers, pick up some good books, especially those romance novels, which they love. So, and we do a lot of outreach as well. It's no longer that we wait for you to come to us. Hey, we go to you. And you need to register and you live in a senior center, we're going to the senior centers and greeting people and registering them and helping them get their books and whatever else they may need.
Okay. Welcome back, sir. John, so we're talking about the ongoing need to get our libraries up to speed. And tell us what's at stake right now, what we're trying to accomplish now.
So the three library systems are asking the city for $16 million in operating funds. That's operating funds, the staffing, the buying of material, books, DVDs. And then we're also asking for $60 million in capital funds to help repair our buildings and keep the buildings clean, safe, and secure, and to buy updated hardware, software, computer hardware and software.
There's two issues on the Capitol. Let's just talk about that for a bit,
sure.
Minute, because we're talking about the buildings that people go into to spend time at the library. And
correct.
Some of those buildings are very old, and some of them are falling apart. I know this isn't new. We fight this fight every year. It's a good fight. It's too bad we have to fight this fight.
Exactly.
But there has been progress made in the last couple of years, but there must still be maybe pockets of facilities that are in great need of repair, and then the other challenge is to bring the libraries into the 21st century, right?
Yeah, I know. You're exactly right. We have made great strides with cooperation with the city council and the mayor and the library systems. We've gotten a baseline funding, and that has stabilized library systems. However, there's still a need. We still have branches whose air conditioning systems are broken.
Right.
Are beyond repair and need to be replaced. And heating that's broken and beyond repair. And that makes it for a very uncomfortable library visit. And we want our patrons, we want our staff to be in a safe environment.
And a comfortable environment.
And a comfortable environment. And then And then also hardware. You know, computers break. Computers need upgrading. Capital budget goes to paying for that, and we need that. And we want our customers to have the best computers they can have. And one thing we did learn the other day is that the library systems are using capital funds for capital projects. And so they're taking away money to buy material to make emergency repairs on buildings, and that's upsetting.
Now,
that's because the city's not giving us enough capital money to do those emergency repairs.
And let's take a step back. The role of the libraries have changed over the last, you know, X number of years. What roles are they playing in communities? How are people using the libraries other than going to do their final paper if you're a high school student?
We still provide the basic core services, circulating material, providing information. But beyond that, our use has grown exponentially. We provide, as I said, the aforementioned computers. We provide Wi-Fi. We provide tablets. We provide laptops, hotspots. All the programs that the libraries do, they're overwhelming. We do after-school programs. We do exercise classes for adults. We do immigration programs for recent immigrants, citizenship programs, I'm sorry, for recent immigrants. We provide adult learning classes for people who do not read or write English. We are expanding our services to include video visitations for incarcerated families.
What is that? How's that work?
So one of the problems that families have for loved ones who are in jail, these visits are far away. The prisons are far away, or they take a while to get to. So what we've done is created rooms for that have teleconference, a video conference, so you can have a face-to-face meeting without actually physically going to the jail, the prison.
Wow, I've seen people take that trip, and they take that trip with little kids, and those are not pleasant experiences, and they can be traveling great distances. So
exactly,
that's and the citizenship classes actually, you enroll for a series of classes, and at the end of that process, you are ready to become a citizen.
Yeah, and we provide those for that, recently. My office is in the Woodside branch,
yeah.
And there's an hourly rate, an hourly rate is the person who helps the librarian shelve books, create programs. She just became a citizen, and that's so rewarding to see, and it's because of the classes that the Queens Library has provided. And it's a beautiful sight to see people become citizens.
I know that there's been much distance between, much time has passed since the problems of the Queens library system, mm-hmm. and I don't like to bring up things but I do remember that there was so much trouble just a few years ago. And tell us about how the library has changed in terms of the management, relationships with members. I know Dennis Walcott's the new person in charge there. How has he changed things? Let's talk about that just a little bit.
Yeah, sure. The new administration has brought stability to the library. There's a sense of trust that the administration is going to do the right thing by the staff. They are working with the union to ensure staff are treated properly, that they're getting compensated properly.
They're doing some interesting things. I mean, I see, they've got quite a presence on social media, and they're announcing stuff that seems to me to be, they're trying out different ways of connecting with the folks of Queens.
Yeah, and they're trying to be more, they're making more of a visible effort to be inclusive. Queens is incredibly diverse. We have people from all over the world, all ages, everything. And we want to include them. The public library is an egalitarian institution. And we want to make sure that everybody knows everybody's welcome. And the administration is making that effort, as it was, whereas the previous administration, who knows what they wanted to do.
Just to remind listeners, there was a major problem with the previous leadership of the Queen's Library that resulted in a big shakeup there. Mm-hmm. Folks were not using the money properly, and the union was fighting the case to, make sure that things were being done as they should be. And it sounds like we have had... These things always require, review, and they always require an ongoing relationship. But it sounds like things are going well.
Yeah, and it's because of the union's activism and the members' activism. Things have changed at the Queen's Library for the better.
We're talking with John Hislop. He is the president of the Queen's Library Guild Local 1321. We are in the throes of the city budget process. That's the process where the city council and the mayor of the city get together and discuss how to spend $86 billion, I think it's up to now. Is that right? $87 billion?
I have no idea. Lots of money.
But within the context of $80 plus billion, $16 million for operations and $60 million to improve the facilities of the libraries across the city does not seem like that big a leap.
I agree. It does not seem like it. It seems surmountable.
And okay, before I let you go, mm-hmm. anything I should have asked you that you would like to promote or talk about in the world of the union or the library?
No, I think you covered everything. We just it would be a great service if the city council and mayor agreed to the funding ask. So,
John Hislop, president of Queens Library Guild Local 1321. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Chris.
And we will talk again, my friend.
Take care.
We'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. In this next segment, we're going to talk about an initiative that the union is putting forward. My next guest is DC 37 Director of Field Operations, Barbara Edmonds. The initiative is the Women's Leadership Academy, a six-month program for women activists or officers at the local level. It begins in June. We're taking registrants now. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the DC 37 Women's Leadership Academy and how it was conceived. And I believe this is part of a national initiative, actually, that AFSCME is doing, correct? I mean, isn't there, with a large number of public employees being women, this seems to be perfect sense to be doing this.
It is, and it's a really wonderful program, and at a time when we're really looking at uplifting our women not only in the communities, but obviously in the labor movement. This is a really great opportunity. AFSCME actually spearheaded this roughly 5-6 years ago, probably going back even a little bit further, and they have been implementing this program nationally, and we are the first of the affiliates throughout the country, including Puerto Rico, to implement this program. So it's an exciting initiative. We are launching it, and the expectation is by June 8th, and we have revised our deadline, which was originally May 31st. But by June 8th, we're hoping to get a number of applicants in, women activists from across our locals within District Council 37. And we're really excited about going forward and having the program start.
Neely, what's the number? It's way over 50%. It's closer to 60% of the membership is female. What are the goals in terms of why would someone want to become part of the Leadership Academy? What are they trying to, what do we have to offer for them?
Well, the exciting thing about this and the most important thing is that we're really trying to use this as an opportunity to give women, and most of these folks are already leaders, but this is an opportunity to provide them with the skills, with the mentoring, with the support that you don't always get in a structured way. And it also is an opportunity to help them do the important work that we have to do in our labor movement, and particularly as we face the Supreme Court case decision that's pending, you know, called Janus versus AFSCME. It's really a time when we need women to continue to step up. And as you pointed out, we have nearly 63% of the members in District Council 37 make up largely women and diverse women of all ethnic, racial backgrounds. And it's a great time for us to do this kind of work. So our hope is that we will get a number of applicants who will come in, members who are activists either as stewards, officers right now, or have been active in their chapters within their locals, and are just simply interested in doing the kind of work that we need to be doing. So the program will be roughly a six-month program, meeting on the weekends and starting in July. But it will be worth their while. And I think as we look particularly at the issues that we're facing, the Me Too issues that we're facing right now around sexual harassment, the issues around pay equity, issues around workplace safety, housing, education, all those challenges, and also the great things that are happening, like getting women involved in electoral politics and the wonderful opportunities that we saw yesterday with Letitia James, the first African-American woman being nominated by the Democratic Party in New York State as a attorney general candidate. It's a really exciting time.
Well, it's certainly clear to me, as there has been so much angst since November of 2016. I mean, it certainly seems clear to me that in terms of progressive activity, women, African American women in particular, have been really facing the challenge, confronting the challenge of getting out to the polls and voting and being involved in the progressive movement. You know, we've always connected labor rights with human rights and civil rights, and this is an opportunity to, I guess, for women to sort of become part of and to communicate with each other about best practices and ways to organize and mobilize and educate members about the issues that are going on. As you said, and as you just said, at a time when labor is under attack, at a time when there has been a concerted effort to reduce the ranks of union membership in this country, and at a time when those efforts to reduce the ranks have been far too successful, there is nothing better than an opportunity for women to really take a role in taking back the labor movement.
Absolutely. And if you look at the history and the tradition of AFSCME, as well as council, we have been leading the way. And our executive director, Henry Garrido, in fact, has made this part of his vision as part of our Leading the Way program in moving and facing the challenges and the opportunities that we have. We now have an AFSCME, our second secretary treasurer, who's a woman, Elisa McBride, and she has been very instrumental in developing and getting the first Women's Leadership Academy to AFSCME off the ground as the education director. And we now have had a history, a rich history, with Lillian Roberts, who I believe was the first associate director, as well as the first African-American woman, and executive director of District Council 37. And she was also a part of that legacy of supporting women leaders and helping promote and enable women to move up in the leadership ranks. So this is really a continuation of that tradition that our executive director, Henrique Garrido, believes is so critical for us in these times. And it's really also celebrating, acknowledging. And our hope is that at the end of the day, as the women that are nominated and eventually selected by mid-June are going to be involved in developing communication skills. They're going to come up with strategic planning skills and put together an actual plan to help move their local, to help build their local. And they'll be also creating personal five-year plans. And I think it's important to note that part of leadership development is also your self-awareness and being aware of the gifts and talents that you want to uplift to build your union. So that will also be a key part, as well as what I mentioned to you earlier, and that is the mentoring that will be done by senior leaders here at the council staff and others that will be paired up and mentored, and there'll be an orientation process to help make sure that whoever is matched with the member is something that's going to be a fruitful process that's going to really help them build the skills that they need and uplift our union at a challenging time, but I think a really exciting time when women leaders can really play an even more critical role in us dealing with some of the issues that we'll be facing. And more than importantly, building other leaders, because part of this has to be process where we want to not just have one, but we create opportunities through this program that we continue to develop leaders within the locals, within the chapters, and we support each other because that's how our labor movement grows, and that's how traditionally it has grown because so much of the great leadership that's come out of our female ranks. So we're very excited about the program, and happy to talk more a little bit about more of the specifics of it and some of the other folks that are involved.
Well, we've got, again, this is a six-month program. It is part social media, part webinar, part in-person seminars and discussions. And to find out how to become part of this, what should listeners do?
There's a couple of things that you can do to get information on it. Most importantly, we want to urge you to reach out to your local president or reach out to your rep. The other major thing that you can do, and we hope most of the folks check out the DC 37 website, is to go on the homepage. You just go on www.dc37.net, and I believe it's on our Facebook page, but you can see the blog. And that will give you some explanations about the program. You can apply, and the way to do that is there is link information on the website. You can also contact, and I'll repeat this, Claire Manelis, who is one of the key staff coordinating the program, and Claire can be reached at 212-815-1700, and I'll repeat it again, 212-815-1700. And her email address is cmenelas@dc37.net. That's cmenelas elas@dc37.net. We've extended the application deadline to June 8th, as I mentioned to you earlier. The original deadline was the end of this month, but we felt that we should give more time given the Memorial Day holiday and high school graduations and other graduations that are going to be occurring between now to give folks more time. Members, when they do apply, we're asking them to get a letter from their local president, just a letter of support and any other reference letter they'd like to get, particularly just mentioning the fact that they're an activist in the union. They might be a chapter chair, a shop steward, or they've gone through other training programs that we've had at DC 37, either with the local or with our education fund. So that's the easiest way to get the information.
Great.
And there's always coming to DC 37. You could stop by the education fund.
The union is holding a series of town hall meetings, and we're going to be having meetings throughout the month of May. Towards the end of May, what are the last town hall meetings, and where are they being held?
Sure. The two town hall meetings are occurring on Wednesday, May 30th, and that's going to be at the Long Island City Department of Education's location.
And to get more information about that, you can go.
They can get more information also going on our DC 37 website. They can also call the union at 212-815-1000, and they can look for the flyers on the website at dc37.net, www.dc37.net. There's also a town hall meeting on the May 31st, and that's going to be at Lincoln Hospital in their auditorium, and both of these town hall meetings are going to be between 12 p.m. and 1 p.m., and then there'll be a second one at 1 p.m. and 2 p.m., and it's a great opportunity to hear and meet our executive director, who's going to talk about important issues around the Janus case, where we are with our efforts to get a collective bargaining agreement, and the importance of getting out the vote and pushing back to protect the services that we provide each and every day.
DC 37 Director of Field Operations, Barbara Edmonds. I want to thank you very much for being on the show, and you'll be back soon, I hope, talking about the Women's Leadership Academy.
I'm looking forward.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We're almost out of time. I've got to do a couple of announcements before we go. And thank you, Barbara. Find out about the issues impacting your community by attending a DC 37 Political Action Community Association meeting near you. For more information, call 212-815-1550. The Municipal Employees Legal Services of DC 37 reminds you that they provide legal representation to members when applying for citizenship. For more information, call 212-815-1818. Remember, if you've got any comments about today or any of our shows, please drop us a line at State of the Union. That's one word, State of the Union at dc37.net. We appreciate your feedback. I want to thank John Hislop, and I want to thank Barbara Edmonds for being on the show this week. The producer is Rudy Orozco. The engineer is Andrea Minocchio. I'm Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao.